District 4, State Delegate Dan Cox. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. How you doing?
I am fine. Thank you for getting up awfully early and talking to us this morning. We do appreciate it.
My privilege.
You kind of got embroiled into a situation over the weekend. Tell us a little bit about the rally that started off as a reopened Maryland rally, and then you being threatened with being arrested if you actually spoke at it.
Well, sure. Well, first of all, you know, I wanted to say good morning to everyone, and, you know, it's a good day. It's a beautiful day. Spring is here, and we've got some great look ahead for the month of May. I'm very, very hopeful that this is going to make a turn for the best, and we're going to all get out of our houses very soon if we're not deemed essential. But I was essential yesterday, Bob. Let me tell you this. My kids got very shaggy looking, my boys, and my wife said, you know what, you're an essential worker. I need a daddy's barber shop. So we did that. So I felt very good about that yesterday. So we're trying to have fun in the midst of some of these stresses. And, yeah, I did have a little bit of a stress last week because, as you know, I am not necessarily thinking that we should continue this lockdown the way it is. In fact, I'm strongly opposed to continuing the lockdown the way it is. And, my hat is off to the first responders and healthcare workers who have assisted in this matter. But we've known for quite some time now that the data just isn't there to lock down the entire population. This is something that we can fix and work on in a narrow and tailored and reasonable way to protect our vulnerable elderly population, those in nursing homes, those with conditions that could expose them in this virus to some danger and harm. But we do know that the vast majority, 99% of the population, is not in danger with this virus. And that's the science. It's not, you know, politics speaking, that's the science. And so I was to participate in a rally. I was asked to speak and exercise our First Amendment rights and received a call that I might not want to do that, that it appeared to be a situation where there was a fear, there was a very real concern. This call was from law enforcement that I may be charged or arrested. And very specifically, it was stated again, you know, you could be arrested if you came and spoke and participated in this drive across Maryland rally to reopen Maryland. And that concerned me greatly. My wife and I have a family, and I certainly want to fight for our freedom and speak up. But to be chilled into silence, I didn't take that lightly. And so I reached out to the governor's office. And you can read this in my affidavit in the court brief, but I reached out to the governor's office and specifically asked the governor's office whether or not I would be arrested if I spoke at the rally on Saturday. And the response, I got three responses, and all three times, two of the times was simply a response that said, please see the governor's order prohibiting large gatherings. And when you look at that order, it says that it's a crime to participate in a large gathering at this time under the governor's March 17th order. So I took that as a direct confirmation of the inferred threat. And that was also confirmed in the Frederick News Post by a trooper, I believe. I can't remember his name, but his name escapes me. But a corporal, I think, was quoted saying that just because they didn't arrest anybody in Frederick on Saturday doesn't mean that he won't do it because he has, quote, video of the event and of the people that participated. That alarms me. That's a police state mentality. It's outrageous. And I am calling for that man's resignation. He needs to resign from his position because he's doing a disservice to the great men and women in the line of the thin line of blue that we all support. And we need to all uphold our oaths, especially during times of crisis.
Well, let me interrupt here for just a second, and I always play, and I asked a friend of mine who was texting me, and I said, well, if you truly feel strongly about that, why didn't you go? Why didn't you just go ahead and be arrested for the cause?
Well, you know, I've gotten a couple people have pushed back on that, saying, hey, you know, don't be a coward, go and get yourself arrested, and then we'll all bail you out. And you know, I happen to think that's kind of humorous, because these people that are so loudmouthed to say that haven't once contacted my office to see how they could help in any way. And I've been advocating in these capacities, and everybody in the political world knows that I've been advocating with the governor's office to relax some of these draconian orders for, you know, almost the entire time they've been in place. So, and not only that, but I did do something. I came right to my desk as soon as this, you know, and I worked hard, and, you know, with over basically a 48-hour time frame, mm-hmm. And with some great brave plaintiffs, which include 10 pastors, includes two businesses, one of which is a Frederick County great business that my kids love, Adventure Park USA, right there in Newmarket, and then another campground over in Washington County, Antietam Battlefield, as well as some great Iraq war veterans who are sick and tired of the draconian rules taking away their freedoms. We all stood together and we filed a brief, and we filed a complaint with the U.S. District Court asking the court to review this matter. And, you know, Attorney General Barr under President Trump has indicated that that's the process that they're looking to see people follow when these orders appear to overreach, as they are here in Maryland.
All right. Do you have some time to hang through the news? Because I want to talk about your lawsuit. I want to talk about some other things that that are going on in the state of Maryland and regarding this COVID-19, and maybe kind of understand how you would approach reopening the state. Can you do that?
Absolutely.
All right. I mean, that reopen Maryland that you were advised not to attend, or you would be threatened, or you would be arrested. So what you did was you filed a brief, and you have filed a joint lawsuit against Maryland leaders. Who are you filing that against?
Well, some great people have joined, and I'm part of that. It's about 18 plaintiffs, and one of them is Reopen Maryland, and they represent 22,000 group members in Maryland, Marylanders that are small businesses that are standing together with employees who have lost their jobs, unemployed. And, you know, we're going directly against the governor, not because of any personal animus, but in terms of the official capacity. You have to do that because the governor is the one solely controlling every single executive order. These are coming straight from him. So the question as to whether or not they overextend the statutes or the Constitution has to be something that is looked at by the courts. And it's, you know, it's a crucial situation for so many people. I mean, we just heard about the unemployment situation, and I know that many, many of my constituents have reached out to my office about this. It's a tragedy. There are literally about 300,000 or more people who have had to file for unemployment, and it's spiked up almost 7% now. And the rollout of the website was sadly a disaster. And many of these people have not received a single penny. And here we are going into the seventh or eighth week now of the lockdown. We're 60 days from the catastrophic health emergency today. And here we are. We see that, you know that we were told that by Easter, we would be worse than as bad or worse than New York. That was a guarantee. And that was with the lockdown, but yet it didn't happen. And so it's time to re-look at these rules and make sure that we protect our constitutional freedoms and don't ever surrender those ever.
What are you seeking? What is the group seeking to gain from the lawsuit? Are we talking monetary, or are we just talking about reopening the state? And so fill us in on that.
Well, first of all, you know, I'm not going to go into details of each issue. You know, those are issues for the court, but I will give some generalities, and I want to make it very clear I am not taking attorney's fees myself for this at all. I'm and also very grateful for co-counsel who's reduced his attorney's fees. But there's also an amicus brief coming in support by Congressman Andy Harris, which I'm very grateful for. We also learned this morning, because there's three parts to my lawsuit, and the plaintiffs, and I'm one of the attorneys, but the plaintiffs are seeking a constitutional statutory review of the lockdowns and of the state forcing anyone to stay in their homes and have face masks. We have a constitution that says that no one, not even the president of the United States, not the governor, can order anyone into a house arrest of any kind without due process of law. And, you know, the governor's trying to use this to extend it beyond now beyond 30 days. We're looking at 34 days today in a house arrest situation. And, you know, some people have pushed back and said, it's not really house arrest. You can leave your house. Well, no, you can't, unless you're doing a very specific essential job that the governor has declared is allowed by his choice. And that is a par for the course definition of what a house arrest is, because when that is taken away from your choice, it's the state telling you when you can leave your house. That's wrong. It has no basis in law for the healthy. Now, the statute allows quarantining the sick, and no one can argue with that, because there is a temporary public health safety measure to allow the governor to, in a time of pandemic emergency, to quarantine sick people for a very limited time. But, you know, the statute says they have to be given the right within 3 days of a quarantine to go into a circuit court. They have to be served papers that allow them to seek review that says, you know what, I'm not really sick. And they can have a doctor check on them and see if they really are sick. And then they have to be let out of quarantine as soon as the doctor says they're well. And so when, you know, you start locking down society, that's wrong. Second part is commerce powers. You know, the federal government has reserved to itself the commerce powers of the United States. And the governor, unfortunately, has picked winners and losers with essential versus non-essential. And we're asking the court to say and review that and to say that that's unconstitutional. And then additionally, the final part is the illegality of the shutdown of the churches. And sadly, the atheist group, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, has just informed my office that they are filing a brief in support of the state to shut down churches.
Dan Cox, let me ask you a question. If you were the governor, because a lot of people believe the reason why the governor is doing this and has done this is to protect the citizens of Maryland. And so a lot of people want him opened up. So I guess that's why he's dragging his feet. But say you're the governor of the state of Maryland, what would be your plan to reopen the state?
Well, I think I would look directly to the seven states that never shut down. And you look at South Dakota and you see just an amazing combination of carefulness and protection of people and very low death rates comparatively with the population. And yet not a single person lost their liberties. No one was ever locked in their homes for at any period of time, more or less 34 days now. And never were they having to be forced to go into commerce with face masks, which, by the way, is now being deemed in Oklahoma City or Tulsa, Oklahoma, as a public safety crisis in itself because of so many robberies. So they've overturned that ban out there. And all across the country, you see these draconian orders that are being turned back. The churches were never shut down in many states, and yet they were shut down here. Those are things that are absolutely wrong. Picking and choosing winners and losers among business. You know, the most essential people are the small businesses in our state and really any business. But, you know, a lot of people don't understand that 50% of the state budget comes from the small business community, which has been deemed non-essential in this state. So that's why the governor announced that we're having a $30 billion potential, or the comptroller announced close to $30 billion shortfall in our budget. And why is that? Because the state, the governor, ordered the source of that income to be shut down unilaterally, and that's inappropriate. I think that, you know, when you look at these other states, they've been very careful. They've been seeking to protect their seniors. They've been finding ways to make sure that everyone is, during this time, showing care towards others, social distancing, not coughing and sneezing on people. And if you're sick, for God's sake, stay home. So, but we don't have to force the healthy back, you know, to be locked down.
One other question, and that is, obviously, the governor went out and got a half a million testing kits from Korea, and his wife was a big part of that. And there are people who are saying, hey, you got them. Why aren't we able to use them? What are you hearing from the governor's office of why they're not using these testing kits? And the governor seems to be, you know, holding on to them and divvying them out when he deems necessary.
Well, honestly, the governor has not briefed the 42 House Republicans in our caucus lately. I think about a month ago or so, there was a briefing, and that topic was not even on the radar because it was still secret at the time. And I honestly am looking at the news, and I'm appalled at some of the discussions. I've never heard of a situation where, there's an interposition of a governor using the National Guard to lock down things from, so you know, supposedly from the feds trying to get them. And I heard the governor say that that was resolved. Now I don't know the details enough to speak on it other than that.
All right. So moving forward, where do we go from here, Delegate Cox?
Well, you know, if people would like to in any way support the case going forward, or support the theories behind the case that we need to, you know, begin to immediately free Maryland, I would hope that they would go to Reopen Maryland on Facebook and do what they can to help out, join in the cause, advocate, make your voices known, because this is an issue that will not go away unless everyone makes their voices known. And, you know, we are smart enough and kind enough as a people to know that we can protect our liberties while at the same time protect our neighbors. And I take offense at the governor saying that we have to do away with our liberties by being locked down in our homes because of some kind of love for our neighbors. Well, that's not how the law works. Love goes both ways, and so do our liberties. And so I would hope that people would join in that concern and make their voices known, because if they don't, you know, I'm hearing stats saying that the medical directors are saying, and the governor himself said on the news, that we're looking at wearing masks for a year, okay, up to maybe more. And not only that, but continuing this rolling sense of lockdowns. And, you know, my daughter's a senior. It's time that we get the kids back to playing their sports, back to having their graduations. This is an outrage. No child has ever died of COVID itself. There's been one or two kids that have died in the whole entire world that had COVID, and that was always because of complications from the briefings that I've been given. This is not a serious endangerment to anyone other than a certain segment. We can do our best to protect those wonderful people while at the same time letting the 99% of people who are not in danger with any serious harm to remain and go about our normalcy of American life.
Van Cox, I appreciate your time, spending some time with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.